I was, Your Honor, through.
Appreciate your efforts through two trials and the appeal.
Thank you.
Move on to the last case of the morning, which is Octavio Tapia versus the INS. No sense. Mr. Schwartz?
Yes.
What? Yes, please. You can hear you anyway.
Okay. Judge Mannion, Judge Williams, the petitioner was deprived.
You were here earlier about Judge Ripple's ill today, but he will be hearing the tapes and will be participating in the decision. He's the third member of the panel. You may have not been here when we announced that this morning.
Thank you so much for that information, Judge. The petitioner was deprived of a fair hearing and meaningful access to the immigration court during his deportation proceedings. This court has affirmed an alien has such due process rights in the Angel Ramos case, which is cited in our brief. Angel Ramos also discusses Podio versus INS and Botanic versus INS, two decisions issued by this court. Now, in Petitioner Tapia's case, he should have been in court as of May of 1996. That was the day his hearing was supposed to take place. He didn't end up getting into court until April of 1998. During that time frame, there was a change in the law, a change that precluded him from being able to apply for suspension of deportation relief, which is basically his only way to stay in the country. And he's been in the country since 1987, building a life for himself with a business and property, paying taxes. We're here to say why he has that statutory entitlement to apply for suspension relief, why this court has the equitable authority to allow him to apply for that relief, not to grant it. We're only here just asking the court to allow him the opportunity to apply. The petitioner deserves a new hearing because while the order to show cause, the deportation charges were issued back in 1995, he never physically received the document.
As I understand it, he admitted that his cousin received it, right? That his cousin?
Your Honor, he said that it's possible that it could have been signed for by his sister.
Oh, I thought he admitted in his testimony it was signed by a sister or cousin.
No, actually, Your Honor, if you look at the record of the proceedings, and I will tell you the page numbers, in the record of proceedings, the pages 85 to 88 of the record, the immigration judge does the questioning. It's not the government attorney doing the questioning, it's the immigration judge. And if you look at pages 85 to 88, you'll see that before the judge started his questioning, he said, I believe that it was signed for by the sister. But there was the sister was not subpoenaed to testify. There was nothing to check the signature. There was no testimony, whether, even if it was a sister, if that was a responsible person.
So when the judge made a statement, Tapia didn't disagree with the judge saying it was a sister or the cousin?
He said it could be. He said it was a possibility. But we're saying to you, Your Honor, that that's not meeting the burden of proof.
That's not enough.
No, because if he was properly served under the stop time rule, he lost his eligibility for suspension. So determining whether it was proper service was completely vital to his case. It was everything to his case. Okay.
That was the last known address that he had given, right?
It was the last known address. Yeah,
and it was, and there's no dispute that it was properly mailed and all.
Well, they presented a sort of a return receipt card, and it had a signature, and they made a comment. Maybe it looked like some name that was not the name of the sister. The name was Batista, and the respondent, when he was pressed by the judge, said it could be.
But we have to assume, at least, that it went to that address, and somebody signed it.
Somebody signed for it at that address, yes. Now, aside from, you know, that issue, which, you know...
Let me just finish up on it. He never said that it was not the sister or the cousin.
No, he did not. He said that was a possibility. And, you know, that was the extent of... now, you know, the government does have, you know, a burden of proof in deportation hearings. And we just believe that it was such an important issue vital to this case, there should have been, you know, a full-blown discussion of it. That's all. And we don't... The petitioner's counsel tried to discuss it more with the judge, and he kind of got cut off.
And then you have a right, don't you, to call witnesses in that kind of proceeding, or was... Is there an effort to call a witness? I understand the government had the burden. Was a sister or cousin called, and did he have a right to do that?
Well, the government didn't call any witnesses. They just presented the certified receipt card.
I'm just wondering if you would have had the opportunity to call the cousin or the sister if such a request was made. So that I agree with you, this was very critical whether or not he got the notice.
Yeah.
So understanding the government has a burden, but understanding the practicalities in the sense of presenting evidence, that is, to, you know, make this a conclusive thing one way or another, you were given the opportunity to call a witness.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but our position is the government didn't meet its burden of proof. Now, if the government had presented, subpoenaed the sister, maybe that thing would have been addressed. Maybe they would have gotten a handwriting expert. Maybe they would have called the sister. But our point, Your Honor, is the judge, just in a perfunctory manner, said it almost seemed like he was just trying to move on with the case. And it turned out to be an issue, which is, you know, haunting the petitioner because it's cutting off his eligibility. But Your Honor, what we really want to get into is that the immigration judge, if he had timely ruled on the motion to reopen the case, the petitioner would have been allowed to apply for suspension of deportation under the old law. Because the immigration judge had the motion to reopen back in June of 1996. The government responded in July of 1996. The judge didn't rule on the motion until April of 1998. In January of 98. And there's been case law in the Ninth Circuit where the court has held that if the judge reasonably could have held the hearing before April 1st of 1997, they should have been allowed to apply for suspension under the old law, the pre-IRA-IRA law. And we said in our brief, Guadalupe Cruz case, page 8 of our reply brief, which, you know, gives an example of that. Now, at the immigration judge's hearing in 1998, the judge did not even ask about the issue of whether there could be a non-proton application for suspension. And there is authority for that to happen. In our administrative brief, we had cited in regarding Garcia Linares. This court has, in fact, Judge Ripple wrote the decision in Botanic versus IMF, which says that if there's a change in law and there's delays, and, you know, in that case it was a procedural defect, that you should be able to put the parties back in the place. They should have been given a new hearing that comports with due process.
Now, you're into your rebuttal time. You may want to just keep going, but I just wanted you to be aware of that.
Okay, well, I would like to, stop at this point and other than to say that there was a 2-year delay here, because he could have gotten his day in court. 1 year and 7 months was unreasonable. If the immigration judge knew the suspension application was pending, knew that IRA-IRA was enacted on October 1st, 1996, and it was a common practice to move those cases along to allow those aliens the chance to apply for the release. And we're asking this court for a remand just to allow him the opportunity to apply for release. Because those procedural due process, those delays rise to the same level as it was in Botanic versus INF, where the change in law shouldn't prohibit the petitioner from being allowed to apply for release.
Okay. Ms. Friedman?
Good morning, Nancy Friedman for the respondent in this case. May I begin by asking whether the court has any questions other than the...
Why don't you just start on this last point he left, that is that it was the delay caused by the judge in terms of the ruling, and whether or not that's been raised here specifically, and what your position would be. I mean, he's arguing that now.
The petitioner essentially is saying that because his hearing occurred in August 1998, that he was denied due process, that it was a fundamentally unfair proceeding because by that time the law had changed. But he is incorrect because the law many times changes over the course of time, and he essentially got another bite at the apple here after he did not appear at his May 1996 hearing, claiming he didn't get notice and filed a motion to reopen. He essentially got another chance at a hearing. He got all the process he was due here. The problem is Congress had changed the law by that time. This court's case is clearly controlled by Seventh Circuit decisions in Angel Ramos and the Yusinovic decision as well that I did not cite in the brief. It's 313 Fed Third 1025.
You can read that. You send that in as supplemental authority, okay?
Yes, Your Honor. And that case clearly controls this case in which the court recognized that the change in the law must be applied at the time of the hearing. Now, unfortunately, petitioners don't always get hearing dates as quickly as they would like. That's, an inherent unfortunate reality of the immigration system. But Mr. Tapia had his full and fair hearing. He had a chance to discuss the service issue, and he had a chance to discuss every other issue. I just want to briefly go to the transcript of the hearing at page 87, talking about the signature on the certified notice. The question was, is that your signature? No, it's not mine. Well, can you make out the signature? No response. You don't recognize the signature? It could be my sister or my cousin. Okay, thank you. He had already testified he lived with his sister, brother-in-law, and cousin at the same address. That was the address to which the certified receipt was mailed and signed and returned. It is not the burden of the government to call witnesses to verify the signature. In fact, as I point out in our brief, a signature is not required when the certified receipt is sent to the proper address that it was in this case. I just want to address the petitioner's reference to a Ninth Circuit decision in Guadalupe Cruz. Although that decision is clearly not the law of the Seventh Circuit following the Yusinovic decision, even if it were the law in this circuit, it would not help the petitioner because what Guadalupe does is discuss immigration judges' decisions in which they applied the stop time rule before April 1 of 1997. So it does not help this petitioner. So the board's decision should be affirmed in this case. I see the petitioner did not even address the streamlining issue, so I will not go into that.
You can cover whatever you want.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
It's up to you. You can cover whatever you want.
I will just refer to the arguments in our brief. I have nothing additional on that unless the court has any other questions, I will just thank the court for their time and submit on our brief with the addition requested. And through a letter brief, Your Honor?
Well, the normal 28J letter, we call it.
Yes, certainly, Your Honor. Thank you.
And I guess you've got a minute or so, Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We've cited the Guadalupe Cruz case in our brief because if he had, if the petitioner had gotten a hearing before April 1st, 1997, like the petitioner in Guadalupe Cruz, he would have been eligible for suspension relief under pre-IRA-IRA law. Now, in Andre Ramos, on page 34 of our initial brief, we explain how this court cited in dictum in Andre Ramos that it might consider this be a violation of an alien's due process rights for the immigration judge to cause such unreasonable delay so as to allow a change in law which negatively impacts upon the alien as a result of that delay. So we think Andre Ramos supports our position on that. This delay was so unreasonable, and the immigration judge in the record of proceedings does not have any justifiable explanation for this delay. It's just not described. And for these reasons, we believe, why should the petitioner be punished just because he wasn't given a hearing on time? The judge could have scheduled a hearing. He had from May 96, the time the motion was filed, until April 1st of 97 to set up a hearing. In Guadalupe Cruz, it only took the judge 3 months to set up the hearing. So we think that the delay is just so grand that it's not fair to punish the petitioner and take away his only right to be able to apply to stay in this country.
Okay, thanks very much. That case will be taken under advisement.